back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We are positively back in the city. This guy's old stomping grounds of West Baltimore. I feel like a stranger when I'm near Mount St. Joe, but I have friends at the bar here. We're at Spirits West. We're on Wilkins Avenue in beautiful West Baltimore. Hometown, Calhoun Street is what you call home, Chris Baker, correct? Yep. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have my Window Nation floppy hat out. I will break that out momentarily. I have rock and roll belt buckles today. Chad Wiesling, NFL agent, is going to be here today. He requested the... Oh, he's sitting right here. He requested the Peter Frampton belt buckle. So, wow. It's all brought to you by our friends at Window Nation and our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I don't know if we've had a winner or not, because I have a feeling like over here, if you win $100, you don't just yell, I won $100. You just take the ticket, cash the ticket, go home, do what you do. But I tell you, we're going to be celebrating 25 years at WNST, giving these away. I might have some hot sevens by then. August 3rd, it's our 25th anniversary. We'll be at Costas all day. Then on the 4th, we're going to move to Drug City because I need a milkshake, a big boy milkshake. That's going to be on the 4th. So we're going to make it a two-day celebration, but it's going to be a year-long celebration of 25 years, which is almost half as long as I've known Chris Pica. And man, from the time I knew you, you had a Mount St. Joe thing about you. You were very young. I was younger. But you had a St. Joe thing. I was from Dundalk. I was still in high school when I met you. And then you went to Loyola College, which is where you were. And man, between like the Mount St. Joe thing and the Loyola College thing and Malone winning a championship, this is, and us being in the neighborhood, this is prime for you to be here, man. So I'm pleased you've decided to come have a crab cake and a Godfather sub here at Spirits West.
Excellent food here. Absolutely excellent food.
Nice, you fed nice your visit. Face, didn't you? Yep, ate
no
large.
Doubt, no doubt.
How many weeks is it going to take you to eat that sub that you got here?
Ooh, my dude, I could probably clean it off tomorrow for lunch.
Afternoon.
Yeah, it'll be afternoon.
Chris Pike, of course, is our blog and tackle NFL expert. Chad Wiesling's here. We're going to welcome him in, as well as some belt buckles from Boston and Led Zeppelin, amongst others. We're going to have a good time. Chad is an agent for NFL running backs. So I'm going to start this with a football conversation with you, because we could talk Orioles, and Chad's going to be involved in this. But the running back thing with J.K. Dobbins popping off, as long as you were involved in the league and everybody, going back to Ricky Williams and Reggie Bush and whatever, right, when you were with the Saints and Falcons after that, the running backs have always kind of been screwed and undervalued, right? I mean, like, I don't know that there's been a running back that has been overpaid at any point in the end, because they don't last long, right?
Well, I think that goes back a couple of decades. I mean, we had, you know, Ricky Williams, like you mentioned. You know, Ricky was traded, went on to Miami, then came to play for the Ravens too towards the tail end of his career. We had Deuce McAllister, who started off his first year as a kick returner for us and then became the starting running back after we traded Ricky. Deuce had a very nice career.
Deuce was a hell of a back.
Yes, he was.
He was a rebel.
Ole Miss and a great, you know, running back on a team that we threw the ball an awful lot, but we had to have a player like him.
That was Aaron Brooks' era, right?
Yes, it was.
Right.
And we had Joe Horn as our top wide receiver. We had Jerome Payton. We had a good crew of offensive players. So the running back position, at least in as being a little bit older, looking at that, these are guys that are not playing 12, 13 years at the position now. And I think NFL owners have gotten to a point now where these guys maybe get two contracts.
Well, you decide to be a running back, and you're good at being a running back when you're in high school, and then you're like, all right, what's my pathway to getting rich?
Right.
Well, all right, you're going to go to college, and they're going to rip you up for a year or two or maybe three. You want to play, so you get there. You want the ball, right? Then you get into the league, and they're like, all right, here's $10 million or whatever. This is enough to get you, you know, you're good. Mom's taken care of and whatnot. But that next thing.
That second contract.
That is a promise that, unless you get injured, you know, you have some tragedy, something happens, that if you're a safety or a wide receiver, even if you're a lineman, you think, I got 8 to 10, 12 years in me, right? I mean, Haloti Ngata, guys get paid, right? But that's the position, right, where, like, it just doesn't happen.
Well, I think it happens in a lot of positions. I worked in the XFL, and you look at players, we had guys who were, you know, NFL adjacent, had played in the league, and these guys are in their late 20s, 28, 29, 30, and they're trying to get back in, and they're having a very hard time because of their age. And I think that's partially to do with the, you know, all the studies and all the research was done in baseball where they said, okay, 29 is sort of that year where after 29 it starts to fall off. Do we want to pay guys that are in their, you know, 30, 31 year when we can go draft a player who's 22 at less money? And so the NFL has gotten younger at a lot of positions, and they churn those positions. I think it makes it harder on the veteran guys. The guys who are solid veterans that would help a lot of clubs, they're sitting on the sidelines waiting to get back in. So they're playing in the spring leagues. They're playing in the CFL. They're playing in places where they get opportunity to make money because they're just not able to, at their age, even at the advanced age of 31, you can't get these guys back into the league, and that's across a lot of different positions, I think.
Well, I mean, Peterson and, you know, a couple of Garrison Hurst played. I'm just trying to think of a handful of guys. So one other guy played the last 10 years that played played for the 49ers in our Super Bowl. Frank Gore. Yeah, yeah. I mean, a couple of guys, but like Chad's the agent for Josh Jacobs, and he brought Josh by when Josh hadn't been paid yet. He was, you know, cleaned up real nice in his little suit and his Alabama story and all that, and Chad trying to get him drafted and hoping that the kid can run the ball, get in lineup, carry the ball, be a factor, all that. Then you get to that point, if you have any other position player, you know, took Lamar a little while longer without an agent, but he got paid, right? And I think the J.K. Dobbins thing is a great example of a guy that's now ripped his knee up a couple times. Pissed off and probably could and should be, you know, right? I mean, in some way, but also is not proven, which is also like making me scratch my head and say, who's on his side? Who's giving him this advice to be chippy and to be obstinate with the coaching staff and the scouts about a mini camp practice in June that everybody else is practicing?
Well, you know, Saquon Barkley with the Giants is sitting right, you know, basically said, listen, I'm going to sit out. In some of this, I'm not going to participate in some of this. I think I'm underpaid based on what the Giants have done. So it's, you know.
He got paid in the beginning, right?
Yes.
He was a guy that really
got paid.
Right,
but he sees that he was undervalued when he got paid at the time, and now he's looking at the Giants where they are and going, I should be paid more. So that's where our good friends, the agents, come in. They're the ones
I'm
that
gonna
have to deal
with. I'm going to have Chad do the math before he comes. He's 20 minutes away. You can get a Pepsi here, have what you want, a crab cake. But I'm going to have you do the math of what kind of different car you'd be driving if you had Saquon Barkley than even Josh Jacobs. Like how much money the difference between those football players were in the draft. And they're both quality players. But the difference even in slotting in the first round, just a tremendous amount of money if you're drafted fifth than if you're drafted. Barkley, what was he, fifth, sixth, seventh? He was
something like that. Yep.
Then if you're drafted, what was Josh, 20-something? 24.
Right.
I mean, that's a big difference
of
lifestyle between what Joe Flacco got and what Matt Ryan got in the same draft, and then what they have to go chase later on. As opposed to even Burrow. Like, Burrow got a lot of money, but that ain't going to matter when it comes time in a couple weeks for him to talk turkey with the
Browns
family.
And that's why you have to have a very good agent, as we've talked about a lot here about agents and players and whether they want
to
have one.
He was my agent. I would have gotten the Godfather instead of the crab soup and the salad. But we're at Spirits West. Chris Pike is my guest. We're at 2601 Wilkins Avenue. I promised to hold the menu up. You know what I loved about the menu the minute I came in? Waffle House font right here, man. You know the food's going to be awesome. So I had a bowl of half and half, and I had a Greek salad, and I had some wings. They were delicious, honey. Old babe. But you got like this Godfather thing that Rick's going to be talking about at 4.
Like, it was neighborhood. Excellent.
Like this insane, and Amelia 98 Rock, and if the Hearst people were nice, they'd let her come on and talk rock and roll with me, because I'd love to, like, Mickey says she knows more about music than anybody he knows other than me and maybe Brillhart. So I want to have one of these music think tanks with her. But she's doing this sub shop thing, which is caught on, like, my crab cake thing, which, like, the bacon and beer thing. Everybody's got their crab cake thing's my thing. Thank you. I even own crabcaketour.com, so if they want to squat on that, they can. But this submarine that they have here, I didn't realize there was an Italian cold cut thing until I had Rob Santonio back when he was working with Wise Markets. They sell a Bell Garden sub at the Wise. And I said, what is that? And he's like, well, there was a Bell Garden sub that was at the Bell Garden sub shop, and they went out of business, and everybody in the neighborhood wanted the sub. So then the grocery store down the street started making it.
Right.
Right. So this is kind of a story.
And there's one
like
or two down by where I live, down in South Fed Hill. You know, there's a couple of, you know, Italian subs and those cold cuts.
Well, like Di Pasquale's has to have an amazing one, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking of all the Italian
specialty
stores.
But this one here is very different because
Pastore's has to have an unbelievable Italian. I just,
well, when
it's
Italian sub with
my
meat,
lexicon,
but having,
it's not what I order when I go.
When
in.
You get this here, you have all this like mozzarella and other stuff on top. I mean,
it's
you
like
basically
imported
stuff. You basically have to like tuck it in to be able to.
Does imported mean it's from Dundalk or no? No, I'm just checking. I'm just checking from East Baltimore. Yeah, one thing I'll say about this, dude, I want to get you into your Mount St. Joe and like all that, and your Loyola guy winning the NBA title and all that. But when you're from Dundalk, and this is no offense to anywhere else, I mean, Chad lives over in Canton. When you're on the east side and you get on 95 and you're going to, in my old days, the Capitol Center and the old, you know, going to D.C. or you're going to the airport or you're picking somebody up, family, whatever you're doing, you don't drop off. And I told Moeller this forever. I ain't really ever spent any time in Lansdowne. I don't even know how to say Hale Thorpe till they put the brewery over there, you know? And St. Joe is in one of those places. Like, why would I get off the Beltway at Wilkins and come east unless I was going to the hospital, unless I had a purpose, right? So it's same thing in Dundalk. Like, there's parts of Dundalk that you don't travel through because there's nothing there.
It's residential, yeah.
Yeah, it's where you live, right? You've been Mount St. Joe, and you told me at Spirits West, you're like, I've passed this place. It's the world's oldest, famous, most block, or what is it?
Longest block of row homes.
So this part of Wilkins, yes. 2600 block, yes. Of Wilkins Avenue.
Yep.
Now, you've known this your whole life because, yes, you're at Mount St. Joe.
Because you just passed by. That's literally, I mean, you know, and had seen that and heard that along the way. So, yes.
Well, Rick's got a picture up on the wall, right, in here. Yep, I mean, yep. Yeah. And Bill Cole told me on the show this week, he's like, that's the longest block in America or something like that. Yep. At least they tell me that, unless it's a wives' tale. And I'm like, well, I'm going to learn about it. So between the Godfather sub over here and the longest block, I want you to regale me. And obviously St. Joe's been in the news for a lot of the wrong reasons this week about something that happened 50 years ago. But I mean, you're a very proud Gael. I'll have you sing the fight song. I mean, Rafael Alvarez and Moeller have sung it here on the air before. But like, give me your St. Joe experience, because you went in the late 70s, early 80s, right?
Right. I was 79 to 83, and I grew up, you know, obviously in this part of West Baltimore, Southwest Baltimore.
How far from here?
Blocks-wise. Oh, I'm going to say 12, 13 blocks.
You could ride your bike up here.
You could, yeah. Okay. I mean, basically, you know, unit block of South Calhoun Street, right off of Lombard, between Lombard and Holland.
How far am I from Mount St. Joe right here?
You're actually pretty good ways from St. Joe. You're closer to the former Cardinal Gibbons.
Okay.
Which were a lot of my friends when I grew up over here. That's where they went to school, where they went to Catholic high school. They were Gibbons.
See, in my neighborhood, if you were private, you know, if you were a girl, it was Catholic or Curley or Mount Carmel.
Right.
Like, those are my options. And my parents wanted me to go to Curley. Like, they were ready to pay for it and all that. I said, I'm not going where there's boys and priests. Sorry. I mean, no offense, but, like, I didn't want a private school. I wanted to stay with my friends, all my girlfriends. You know, Kurt Schilling's wife, Shonda, we grew up. I wanted to go where my friend. I wanted to get on the bus. I had friends that went to Curley and Fathom and other places. The neighborhood part of being at a public school for me, but all my private school and Catholic League and, like, all of that stuff, it was always a little foreign to go to the dances there and do different things.
Right. Well, you know, our choices were either Gibbons or St. Joe. Girls basically.
Your girls from Mount St.
Well,
Mount
was,
Sales,
was
right?
No, it was, well, the Sales was some, but mostly Archbishop Keogh, because they
Seton
were.
Seton Keogh? No.
Well,
Seton?
Later.
Later. Right.
Seton was out in. Charles Village.
I didn't know where Seton ever was.
Seton was up by one of the churches, right up
by the
right
time
up by the,
I covered college or high school girls. It was they had a phenomenal team at Seton Keogh. They had a really good team in Lansdowne. I'm gonna
right.
tell
so Rick, Seton Rick and Keogh were separate schools,
right?
And then they joined up, but obviously
at Seton Keogh, which was correct. Next to Cardinal Gibbons,
right? That's right,
across from the hospital.
Yep. So right. Seton was in Charles Village, because I rode the bus with those young ladies on the way to when I went to grade school at St. Alphonsus. Which is on Saratoga Street and Park Avenue. So I took the bus and walked through, you know, downtown right by Hex.
You had Chinese food for lunch every day?
Well, I mean, right next to Chinatown.
Holy heck, you're right by the White Rice Inn and a China
yeah.
Doll.
Yep.
Sell my soul for a bowl of the China Doll.
We had a lot of those. We had a lot of their kids went to grade school. I went to grade school with several of those kids.
Go to the White Rice Inn right now with my mom, a little hot tea.
Yeah, the business people lived up there. Their kids went to St. Al's. I mean, I was in a graduating class of 10. I mean, so in 1979. But
no wonder you turned out weird.
Yeah,
kids.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, we're middle of
how
downtown.
How many boys? Five boys, five girls, or was it 7-3?
It was like 6-4.
6-4.
6-4.
I had all girls in my elementary school, man.
There was
looking at pictures, five dudes and 20 chicks.
Like, across, like, catty corner from the school was like a, God, I want to say Records Illustrated, not Records Illustrated. There was a big record shop on the corner of Saratoga.
Did they sell Pacifica belt buckles?
I don't know
they
what they
did.
They did sell the Ohio Players. You know, so
I got that belt buckle. I was going to wear it.
Right,
it's one of the hardest belt buckles to get.
So there was a big record
it
shop
has a
there.
Special visual,
but the biggest thing, the biggest thing, yes, yes, exactly. The best part about that is though, you could walk down two blocks, and at those days, and you know, for those of us an older generation, you could walk to Hutzler's, Heck, Social Cones.
Right on.
Okay.
All the same places I had at the mall,
right.
You had in the city,
right.
In a department store,
yes.
Like yep. Highland Town.
Yes, right. Right, exactly.
Now, we would always come down to Park Avenue, take the 23 bus down Saratoga. We would get Chinese food, and we'd walk to Howard Street.
Right.
And all those places you talk about, Heck's, yeah. Ocean Cones, and, you know, Stewart's, they were all
right,
there.
And right past Chinatown on that corner was an old line newspaper place, Sherman's.
Sherman's. I had Whitey's newsstand
right.
on Broadway.
Sherman was he was erasable, the best way to put it.
Most important thing of any book stand in the 70s, and it's very, very important. I went through this with Dennis Colazzos last week. Did they have wrestling magazines?
They had everything.
All right. If they had wrestling, if they had wrestling.
They had magazines and newspapers from all over
Pro
the place.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Ridiculous.
They have the Apartment House Wrestling special. You don't know about that.
No, I don't know about that.
Charles Atlas on the back, on the back cover.
That.
You don't remember
Probably.
That? Chris Pike is here. We're talking about West Baltimore, Mount St. Joe. So you were always going to go to St. Joe's?
Well, I actually wanted to go to Gibbons. And
okay.
We went on a visit to Gibbons, one of their open houses, and my mother took one look and said, no way. You know,
didn't want to go to Gibbons?
It was just the vibe just wasn't there for that. And you know,
Ozzie Newsome's mother wanted him to go to Auburn.
Okay.
That didn't turn out that way.
And so we took a visit out to St. Joe, and it just was a better fit. So my mom worked at a Social Security Administration at Woodlawn, so every morning she would just drop me at the cafeteria like 7:30 in the morning on her way out to Woodlawn, and I would take the bus home, and I'd come in
so
the
cafeteria. So it was easy.
Yeah, it was easy. And
that
then
was the thing for me about Curley or Mount Carmel was going to be, like, difficult.
It is, yeah.
And then, like, I bet you don't know. I've told this story once or twice in 30 years. I was a really smart kid. I was like a gifted and talented. I skipped a grade. And in sixth grade, I had a teacher. It was the best teacher I ever had in my life. She's wacky. Everybody hated her. But I loved her. And she loved me because she was really intelligent. She wanted me to go to McDonough.
Okay.
And she, on a Saturday morning, they were doing like an Iowa test out there, like an entry. And my parents like dressed me up at 5 in the morning on a Saturday. And I was 10 years old. And I drove out to McDonough through the gated community, horses, polo grounds, yep. All that. And I went out there and I took the little Iowa test. And I don't really know whatever happened.
Right.
Like, or whether my parents couldn't have afforded. I was 10 years old. I don't
right.
know. But like, that was my entree to private schools right. when I was in sixth grade. And I never looked at it again. I never did a visit at Curley. I never did a visit at Catholic either, although I did do some dances at both of those. I didn't have a our consideration in East Baltimore, and you can appreciate this because you know Mike Preston. Preston went to Kenwood, right?
Yeah.
Everybody in my neighborhood went to Kenwood. All my mother, my stepbrother, everybody went to Kenwood. All the neighbors, and then they redistricted to Dundalk.
Okay.
And you can imagine in Archie Bunker's Dundalk in 1979, 80, 81, when you're going to now go to the school with the kids from Turner's and like all that. But from the time I was in sixth, all my childhood, I thought I was going to Kenwood, and then the busing changed and the zoning changed, and then I was going to Dundalk, and I never considered anything else.
Yeah.
So, like, having that consideration, because you love St. Joe. Like, you went there, you were, like, the team manager. Like,
yeah.
I don't know anyone that is more, I mean, Jim Schwartz loves St. Joe.
Yeah.
He's written checks to Shara.
Yeah.
I mean, like, all that.
Yeah.
But in my friendship, and Mahler loves, but you are the St. Joe guy to me. So doing the show over here, I
yep.
wanted to
yeah.
like, give you some oxygen about
it. Well, it's good. I mean, I went to grade school for a year and a half at school for Stuart Hill, which is now Stuart Hill Academy. It's getting ready to close right off of Union Square. So I did public school for a little bit, but, you know, I got pulled out of there. It just wasn't, you know, at that point, you're early 70s. You know, my
Your
mom,
parents went to private school for you. Nothing
well,
wrong
it was
with
yeah. They wanted because my mom and my uncle both
my
went to St. Al's.
Private school for
they,
me too.
Right,
I
they went to St. Al's, so that's where they put me. So, you know, going out to St. Joe, you know, I go in the cafeteria 7:30 in the morning. It's like five of us in the cafeteria. One of whom was Larry Colmus, who's in there reading the Daily Racing.
There
form,
you go. All right.
You know,
still then.
Yes. Oh yeah, he was all in the horses even at that point.
And
he was a year after me. Right.
Come.
So you have a lot of those
hardest job in the world, by the way.
It is.
I did it once. You know this?
Yeah.
They brought me out to Pimlico, and I did a race. And just remembering the seven horses I had, because when they gave me the race, the first thing was, how many horses? It's 13 horses. I know I'm going to screw this
no
up.
Shot.
So it was like eight that became like five. It was a ridiculously small field. That still screwed it up. It was so awful. that it's legendary. Well, I have the video of it.
And every time Larry comes back to call the Preakness, he still wears a purple tie for NBC to get a little St. Joe love. So we appreciate that.
I told him I was going to stink at it when I did, too. And I did. I stunk.
But
Schwartz was there, right?
Yeah, Schwartz was here after me, but I wasn't really involved with the football guys. Mike Freeman. I went to school with Mike
Freeman.
We've done
a long segment together. You can find out about his book on Stabler and his growing up here. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was a St. Joe guy, too. So just at that time, it was great for me because I was able to get
a mix of people there.
Yeah.
That's a really wild mix of humans.
Yes.
I know all of those humans, and they're...
And there were a lot of them from Howard County, a lot of them from Ellicott City.
They all describe you the same way. Pica, sports nerd, man. He was all sports. And I'm like, well, I met him like 10 minutes later at the News American, and I was 15, and he was like 19, and it was all sports. I mean, you talk about two guys that have lived the life of growing up and loving... I mean, I worked at the school newspaper. I mean, I was the same guy you were, a couple years younger than you.
Yeah.
But like the experience we've had... In how many Super Bowls you and I have taken pictures together at that we dreamed of going
right.
to, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's kind of an amazing thing. And St. Joe allowed you to do that.
It did. It gave me the opportunity to beat, through my head basketball coach at that time, Pat Maggio, met Bernie Miklas through that.
Bernie went to a Rundle, right?
Spalding. Right, and Bernie was doing some preps at that point, so I got to know those people because you have to call in the scores.
Kathy Frazier, you know Kathy?
Yeah, and you had to get on the phone and call the Sun, call the News American.
Kathy was my first boss.
Okay, and so you got to call these people and tell them, hey, this is here are the scores, and that's how I got involved. And so Bernie, through Bernie, I wound up with the internship down at the News American, and so that's how that started. And
God, that was great, right? Kathy Frazier and Bob Clark in there.
Yep.
And
the late Bob Clark, God rest him.
We just had great people, like really encyclopedic knowledge, really, really smart, detailed, community-oriented, knew everything about local sports
history. And probably the quirkiest set of people I have ever been around, top to bottom. I mean, we're talking,
We're talking like sitcom crazy, right?
Yeah.
Like it would have been a great sitcom.
Florio. I mean, you got like...
Oh, you baby doll.
Yeah. I mean, that was an interesting bunch of people. And I'm like, I'm a high school senior looking at these folks going,
well, wow. The weirdest thing for me is I was sort of the last piece. Kevin Eck also interned there after me. I got him his gig there right before it went out of business. I was sort of the last piece of all of it because I was 15 years old when I worked there, right? So I'm 15, I'm 16, then I'm at the paper at 17. By the time I'm 23, I'm on the radio. By the time I'm 28, I own the radio station, right? So that's 25 years ago. In that period of time, all of these people have gone to Sacramento and run newspapers for the last 30 years.
Yep.
There's a whole group of people. The guy that gave me the first interview was Steven Tyler. With Aerosmith, that turned into Tom Hamilton because I guess Steven was too smacked out to do the interview.
Right.
But Tom Hamilton was actually, I was waiting for Steven Tyler to call, and Tom Hamilton called. My first ever interview was Scott LaBar. He was the executive editor of the Sacramento Bee the last 25, 30 years. So, like, all these people went on to do things and moved about. Barry Levine has been on my show. He writes books about, like, all sorts of, worked at the National Enquirer.
Yeah.
Rasig. Right?
Yep.
Ken Davis left there and went up to Hartford, Connecticut and covered UConn sports for years and years.
Bob Paston was the executive sports editor, at that
St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
We took Jeff Gordon and Bernie with them basically there.
And Bernie became a legend.
He is a legend
in St. Louis.
And Jeff was there for many, many years.
There's a lot of power in that room now that I'm thinking about it. News American.
Yeah. There was a lot of...
John Hawkins went on to become a
legendary
golf.
Johnny Hawk was basically the lead intern when I was there. Because he was just starting out.
He was such a hard ass with me, man.
Tom Robinson was my direct boss.
Tom Robinson is the reason I got my gig. Yep. So, yes. And Tom Robinson went on to run the Scranton newspaper.
Yes.
And just a beautiful guy.
And that's I was doing some research for the Baltimore Catholic League. I was looking through the old... I'm going to be going through the News American archives down at the Central Library. But I was looking through some of the Sun archives and the stories about when the News American closed. And they talked about the people who came through there. And there were people, my grandparents still called the News Post. I'm sure your folks did,
always,
too.
All my life. When I worked there, it was
never
News
changed.
Post.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was a city kid through and through, basically, with the newspaper of the city newspaper of Eastern Baltimore County, and you talk about never being over in West Baltimore. I never spent any time over in Dundalk.
Yeah,
in Essex.
Why would you?
I had no idea.
So when I bring you over to Costas for crabs, you're passing places. You're like, you don't know that that
didn't
was the North
exist.
Point
right.
Drive-in. You didn't know that
no.
was the Roll
no.
Arena.
You, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. Never went through the tunnel or anything like that.
It did you ever go over to the steel mill and see it while it percolated? Did you ever drive over the Key Bridge and at least see it from the distance?
Vaguely. I mean,
see, my dad worked and died down there, right? But my dad, there were two or three nights in my childhood where they did an open plant.
Okay.
Where they brought the families down.
Right.
You know, and my dad, and I remember as a little boy walking through, my dad was like, this is where I ate lunch every day. And we go through and see the mill, and man, it was
My grandfather worked at Merrill Shipbuilding in Dry Dock.
Okay.
So down, the, right, so all through
Stevedore
there.
Stevedore work or no?
Welder.
Welder,
yeah,
okay.
Welder, yep. And so, you know, my only trip over to East was the exotic trip to play Archbishop Curley in basketball or baseball.
But we all met at Memorial Stadium like it was a church, though,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. Exactly.
Well, that really was the piece that brought sports together, was bringing people together, was that I would go to Memorial Stadium, sit out in Section 10, and I had a chance to sit next to you.
Right.
In a Mount St. Joe and say, what's Mount St. Joe? What's that purple all about, right? I look at that, right? I mean, like, that was growing up in Baltimore. Kevin Byrne, when Kevin Byrne came here from Cleveland, the thing that his vision of the city was so much like Cleveland, he said, because every person you meet, you'd say, where did you go to high school?
Yep.
And, like, there aren't a lot of – you don't do that in Dallas, apparently. You don't do that in Miami. Yep. Apparently, that's not a thing in other places.
Yep. And it's funny because one of the stories I always tell, the 1982, the final game of the regular season, the Palmer-Sutton game with, you know, the Brewers and the Orioles. I get – my mom gets me a ticket to the game. It's a you know, it's a lower deck ticket, but it's a obstructive view seat. And I get to the window, and it's under my mom's name, and they won't give it to me. They won't give me the ticket. And I'm going to blank here. Who was the gentleman who was the home plate attendant at the Orioles games for forever? Was it Freddie Tyler?
Ernie Tyler.
Ernie Tyler.
By the way, we did the show at McFall's Oyster and Reel.
Okay.
That's his grandson.
Right.
Yeah.
So Ernie was bringing out the tickets, I guess, from the players out to that will call window. And I looked at him, I said, that's my mom's name. The guy wasn't there. And then Ernie, like, patted me on the back, looked at the guy, said, he's a St. Joe guy, he's good. And that's how I got into the final game of 82. It was the only way I could have gotten in the stadium with a ticket we had paid for. But that was the power of that kind of high school connection. He just happened to see my varsity jacket, and he's like,
that's a great story,
dude. Yeah.
I got to take you out to McFall's and do the show next time we do it. Well, he wants to be a part of the Oyster Tour. So
right.
Big shout out to Glenn and everybody at McFall's. We're on the other side of town. We're at Spirits West. We're here on Wilkins Avenue in St. Joe Land. They have a lot of UFC stuff here. Big police bar. They're blue line behind us. You can see there to represent that. Stop on by, have a beer, watch a ball game, get some wings. We're going to have a crab cake. Pike is going to vouch for the Godfather, right?
Yes.
I'm going to take a break. Chad Wiesling's here, NFL agent. We're going to bring him in. I got room here. We'll talk a little NFL, and I'll let you get back to Kate and take her some food for the for all the beautiful creatures and animals that she loves and takes care of. Anything you want to promote animal-wise for your wife before I take a break here?
We just have a lot going on over at Bark. She's working over there in philanthropy, so a lot of events. And, you know, obviously we've had they were overrun with puppies earlier
that.
There, and so they had a couple adoption day events out at Oriole Park. Thanks to
went
the
well,
Orioles,
went well,
went very well, absolutely well. Between money and people, you know, absolutely
adopted
for 2 days.
We adopted three cats up at Adams Jeep about a month and a half ago with Mike Bordick for the Chesapeake Feline Association.
Right. Yep.
Really good Dundalk lady runs that. So shout out to you, Karen. All right. So, but Dundalk people. It involved up in Cecil County in saving animals and loving animals up and getting spayed and neutered.
Very, very
all that
so.
Bob Barker, spay, neuter, all that stuff,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Good?
Yes.
Barks?
Yes.
You want him to call Kate and give her money or anything? Or no?
just go to Barks' website. There's a lot of events that go on in town. It's amazing. The one thing we've learned is how many people, you know, how many bars, restaurants, others do events that benefit Barks, and how many people we run into that have gotten their animals from that organization. It's a brand new facility over in Cherry Hill. It's absolutely beautiful.
We visited it.
Yeah, they've done a tremendous job over there.
And they're going to give the old facility to John Angelos, but that's the next segment.
That's exactly it.
That's it. Chris Pike is here. He's blogging Tackle. He's Mount St. Joe. You want to sing the song or no?
No, I'm good.
How does it go?
I can't remember.
I'll sing the Dundalk High alma mater when we get back in. I'll sing if you sing.
No.
Gosh, man, come on. You're not going to do it?
Nope.
You're not real proud, Gale. all right, we're at Spirits West, 2601 Wilkins Avenue. I dig it because the menu looks a lot like a Waffle House, which is one of my favorite things in the world. So maybe you want to get a club sandwich. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free, 2 years, 0% financing. And I should say right now, Bill Cole is buying his windows from Window Nation. So thank you, Bill Cole. And thanks for telling me about the longest contiguous block in America or in the world. We know.
I want to say America.
I'm going to ask Rick and find out. But we're at Wilkins Avenue. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Hope we got some winners here. I had some feisty ladies in the back here at Spirits West. Anybody win $100 back there or no?
No.
Gosh, man. Second chance. That's second chance, Maryland Lottery. Back for more of the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I'm having a Crab Cake Tour in the next segment or the segment after that. Back for more on WNSD. Stay with us in West Baltimore at Spirits West.